So my name's Ewing, and I work at Leeds Beckett University, and I'm doing a PhD at Leeds University. And what I'm going to talk about today is linked to my PhD, really. But one of the reasons for doing the topic that I'm doing is that I'm hoping to be able to feed some of the stuff that falls out of the PhD back into the course. So I'll be quite interested to hear your take on things as we go along. So yeah, it's entitled "The Role of Technology as Mediating Tools in Developing Professional Identity and Competency of Trainee Accountants," and I'll go through what some of those terms mean in a second. So just a quick overview: the focus of the conference is obviously social media, and I'm not specifically looking at social media in my PhD, but looking at sort of more general technologies. But because we are talking about social media, I've tried to kind of distill it down a little bit into applying it to social media. So I'll talk a little bit about the wider context of the PhD, and then just, I could write forever on the literature review because it covers so much stuff. Yeah. So I'll try not to bore you too much with the literature, but I'll go over some of the literature because it sets a bit of the context around the study itself, and then what some of the findings were associated with what role technology played in actually developing people's professional identity and their competency, and what implications this might have for future practice. And then, as I say, any questions you want to ask at the end. So I'll skip over that because I know you know probably more about social media than I do, but the purpose of it was really just to highlight the fact that, as I say, although I've been looking at technology in general, and I've got a quote later on, that actually all technology is social in one way or another. I'll come on to what I mean by that shortly, but that the functionality of social media, if you like, is multi-purpose, and this diagram sort of breaks it down into publishing, sharing, networking and discussing. So they are sort of the main activities associated with media that is classed as social media. So some of the examples of some of the applications, again, be more familiar with these probably than I am, because I'm an accountant. It's just that I happen to be quite interested in technology. So yeah, Kaplan and Heinlein sort of talk about these different areas, so how it can be used for collaborative purposes. So examples being for forums or for blogs. Content communities where content's actually pushed out through things like YouTube, social networking sites, for example Facebook, virtual games and virtual social worlds like Second Life. So in the context of what I'm going to talk about, these are the applications, if you like, that some of the students who I interviewed talked about, and as I say, I'll talk about how they feel it develops their competency or their identity as I go along. So, yeah, the PhD is quite wide, and really it's looking at technology, but it's also looking at people who want to become accountants. What is it that they need to do to become competent accountants, if you like, and whether that can be assessed, and the role that technology has in that. So there's lots of themes. But the study is a participatory study. So what it basically means is that I've interviewed a bunch of people, which I'll come on to, but they're all recognised as experts of their own kind of social world. And it's really important for me to get a handle on their perceptions, their beliefs, their emotions associated with using technology, and how technology is used in the context of their professional work and developing them as professionals. So loads of stuff in the literature review, as I say, which I'll kind of skip over, but I thought it was important really to put this in because it does set a lot of the context around what I'm going to talk about. So
Do you have a reference list for these?
Yes, I have, yeah.
Is it on this?
It isn't on the slide because I wrote a paper, it's in the back of the paper, but I can forward this to you.
That'll be brilliant.
Yeah, it's no problem. So yeah, the theory of professions, lots of people have written about the theory of professions. Friedson, Ernest Greenwood, Max Weber, lots and lots of people. And in accounting in particular, there's kind of been a move from the 1930s, where accounting was very much rooted in altruism and serving the public interest, and was what Durkheim referred to as moral communities. So it was all about the greater good, really. And then you had the rise of business and commercialism, and that kind of changed the face of accounting, where it became more advisory, more consultative, much more wide in scope. It wasn't just about compliance, it was about trying to save people lots of money. And so there's been a real change from this kind of altruistic perspective to one now that's dominated by self-interest rationales, typified by people sort of protecting their own economic interests, that kind of thing. In terms of how that's impacted on work, work is, in the professions, is very much controlled by organisations. So people sign up to be an accountant and they do a load of exams. They have to have typically 3 years work experience. And the professional bodies set what competencies should be achieved during that period of experience. But actually, the reality is that it's the organisations who determine whether that person successfully accomplishes what they need to do within those 3 years. And really, the professional is playing the rules of the game of the organisation. The professional body is actually quite detached from it. And various organisations have practices like the CULM, which is quite a commonly known practice in accounting, where they recruit a large number of students and know that perhaps they're going to lose 90% of that student population when they take them on as graduates because they're not going to make the grade. And they're prepared to do that because there's a lot of demand for work in those services, and they want to retain the best. So professionalism is used as a target, as a tool of control, the way in which they assess whether people are professional or not is very much determined by their own key performance indicators, by their own targets, by all the critical success factors that they set as an organisation. So at one extreme, you can have somebody who's very sort of socially responsible, and I interview people who, someone, for example, had been sacked because they were too slow, but they were recognised as being very technically competent. Clients liked them, but they were too slow, so they were costing the business too much money, and consequently that person lost their training contract. So they weren't actually not competent in their role, it's just that they didn't meet the objectives of the organisation. So that's work, and then this is kind of feeding into the idea of identity and competency, is the idea of socialisation. So values are learned. There's a lot of stuff again in the literature about learning through communities of practice, how it's a socio-cultural activity. You don't learn in isolation, it's as a result of interactions. So when you have students who leave as graduates, perhaps with very little work experience, that are trying to adopt professional values and become professional, they do that by interacting with people in the workplace, obviously, and they adopt the behaviours, the predispositions, the values of the people that they work with. And, you know, they mimic people who they see get on within the organisation, who do well, because they recognise that they're valued by the organisation. So, socio-constructivism and all the rest of it is a critical part of developing as a professional. And Bonnie Nardi and O'Day, they kind of talk about how organisations are a microcosm of what they call an information ecology. So within an organisation, you've got lots of interactions and you've got lots of things that mediate those interactions. And one of those things is technology, which, as I say, is the thing that I'm quite interested in. So in terms of professional identity and competency, we're basically talking about identity isn't fixed, it's relational, it changes, it's transient. But it is about adopting a set of ideals that are valued by the organisation, whether that be how you look, what qualifications you have, what expertise you demonstrate. And Bourdieu talks a lot about this in terms of cultural capital, and how it's objectified or how it's embodied in the professional. Okay. So in terms of technology, so as I say, information ecology kind of theorises that you've got a lot of interactions that are going on within an organisation or within any situation really, or interaction where the student is being professionally socialised. And when we talk about mediation, what we're really talking about is not the use of technology per se, but it's kind of postmodern theory that talks about how technology isn't just an instrument, it's an agent. So it's kind of active, it acts as an active agent, and as a result of that, certain actions or interventions that produce a particular effect happen through the use of technology, or the non-selection of technology. Basically, technology just has that capability. So this is something that I was really interested in, as I say, as part of the PhD. So crucially, technology can transform experiences, it can shape our relationships with other people, between us and our actions and our everyday life world, and also how we perceive and how we interpret things that happen around us. So as I said before, some theorists, and some people will disagree, but will argue that technologies are nearly always simultaneously social. Conduits of essentially social knowledge, community patterns, and you know, a characteristic of learning and assessment. And some people argue that given that we recognise technology is an agent and it does have consequences of use, that actually we need to give technology a bit more of a voice when looking at sort of educational analysis. So that's where I'm coming from, really. Anybody got any questions? No, not yet? Okay. So I'm going to talk now about the study, what I did, and the results that came out of that. So the aim, I suppose, to gain an insight and understanding of how technology transforms or changes or produces certain effects when used, when students or people who are becoming professionally socialised, are, you know, developing their identity and their competency. I interviewed a range of people, 8 trainee accountants, two of whom were on an undergraduate accounting degree but were working on placement, and the others were working as graduate trainee accountants. Some academics, people from professional accounting bodies, again, crucially, people from the International Accounting Education Standards Board, which is the international board that it's the oversight board, basically, for professional accounting education, and workplace assessors. So these are people who make judgments about the competency of trainee accountants. So the method that I used, used basically semi-structured interviews to collect the data, to understand these perceptions, these beliefs, these emotions associated with what the role of technology was in actually developing their identity and competency. And that was underpinned by different constructs I came across in the literature, which again I won't bore you with too much, but affordances is kind of the values that people put on technology based on what they want to use the technology for, and the compatibility of the intentionality of the use of the technology. Presence is the potentiality or the capability of the technology. Acceptance, some people have a higher propensity to accept new technologies than others. Obviously, when you're leaving as perhaps a graduate going into a new workplace, you might be exposed to technologies you've not used before. So it's quite interested in asking questions around that as well. And then structuration is really this theory that suggests that, okay, you've got this technology, but it's always going to be constrained by social boundaries or by resources. which again was something that was very important for the assessors, because they would talk about wanting to use technology but being frustrated because they couldn't get the support, or they didn't have the time, or they didn't know where to go to access the tools that they wanted to use in the way that they wanted to use them. And I analysed it using thematic analysis, the Braun and Clark method, which I felt was really useful, because the irony was I didn't use technology to analyse my data.
No.
I didn't. As much as I love technology, I wanted to really get a really good handle on the data, so I transcribed everything myself, I hand-coded it all myself, and analysed it all myself using these steps that Braun and Clark come up with. So, a quick sort of overview, I suppose, of some of the results. Say it's quite a wide study, so it covers quite a lot, but in terms of social media, I'll talk about the applications that they talked about using, and then what role those applications had and the impact that they had on their identity and competency. So the trainee accountants talked about using in-house and external forums for networking. So they talked a lot about how they wanted to use these spaces that they saw as being spaces of collaborative learning, where they could ask questions. They were quite anonymous, but they could, you know, so they felt a bit safer in asking questions, particularly the external forums, asking questions that perhaps they didn't feel they could go to their mentors or people within the workplace to ask. None of them used sort of personal blogs at all. They didn't use Blogger or any of the other applications. But what they did have to do, and it was actually because it was a requirement of their job or a requirement of the professional body, was to post reflections. So in the requirement of their job, they have commonly 6 monthly reviews, performance reviews, when they've been out on client jobs, and they'd have to reflect on how that went, what they learned, what they do differently, etc. So they used blogging, perhaps not, you know, badged as blogging tools, but they blogged in a sense for those purposes, but also for the purposes of reflections that they have to submit to professional bodies. But those spaces were always institutionally owned spaces. They were always owned by the organisation. So even though they were reflecting, it was all very formal. They used content communities to look at stuff on YouTube, or webcasts that push information out primarily for their exams. Use social networking sites. Interestingly, didn't use them when they were at university, but as soon as they got into their jobs, recognised that that was a social tool and a community that they wanted to be involved in. And assessors talked about using business simulations, business games, and people recognise that gamification actually is a potential area of use that isn't being tapped into at the moment in accounting, that perhaps could bring some benefits later on. So in terms of mediating factors and the impact that using these technologies had, a big theme that came through is that people feel that your competency is developed in work. You can do all your professional exams and that gives you technical expertise, but actually to develop competency and to develop an identity, you have to be in the world of work. So in terms of the mediating role that technology had, some people very motivated to use technology and accepted it as a normative action. It's what people do in the organisation, so it makes life easy for me to do my tax computations, to do my accounts. Other people were quite resistant, and they did tend to be the assessors, kind of Generation X men in particular that I interviewed, quite resistant to using the technology, and would actually, one person particular sticks out in my mind, talked about devolving these lesser tasks to people who were paid to be good on technology. His job was to, you know, the blue sky thinking and the strategic stuff, and got very defensive about it, and was very clear that it wasn't that he didn't think that technology wasn't valuable, it's just that, you know, it didn't do what he wanted it to do.
Sounds as if we have a bit of anxiety around technology.
Definitely. And this is linked into affordance, really. And as I said before, it's about compatibility of use. And it was obvious that for some people, it's because they lacked the operational skill, like the guy I just talked about, or the capability, the knowledge, what the technology could actually do. But for others, this idea of structuration, as I talk about, these barriers, these cultural and structural barriers that prevented them from being able to use the technology in the way that they wanted. And they did feel that their competency, these were the assessors in particular, was diminishing as a result of that, because they knew there was stuff out there that they should be using, but they couldn't.
I found you a reference. I'm reviewing a book for an international journal at the minute by, I think it's Sukkerland, I think the name is.
Right.
Father and son, and they're talking about how the professions are going to be disseminated by social media and technologies.
Right.
So you might
that'd be really
that.
Interesting. Yeah,
yeah.
Thank
I'll
you.
I'll try to get you the link and send it.
Thank
to
you me. Very much. That would be great. So yeah, and also potentiality and presence, as I talked about before. So this is the idea that technology has the capability to do things, but just because it can do stuff doesn't mean that we should actually use it. So, two examples really that I wanted to mention. One example was that technology, by the assessors, so in some areas of accounting, is being used to, for example, mark case studies, and people felt very strongly about that, about the fact that that shouldn't be the case, because case studies are so nuanced that they felt that actually computers would not have the empathy to be able to mark those effectively. So quite resistant to technology being used in that context. However, and I didn't know this before I did the interviews, and perhaps I should have done, but technology is being used quite a lot in accounting to recruit students. So particularly with the Big Four, they'll have a telephone interview, and then they have to do psychometric testing, and it filters everybody out, and it's the computer that makes those decisions. It's not a person. It's the technology that's acting as a person. And that's because, you know, the employers feel that these applications lack emotional intelligence, so it's going to be a very objective process. So, you know, the fact that technology is seen to lack emotional intelligence is great in terms of capability in one context, but not so great in another. So that again is another factor that determines how it's used in those interactions. Other factors, how am I doing for time? I'm conscious I'm wittering, but I'm near the end. Other factors, these I found these really interesting, was the power relations that go on. So as I said before, sort of postmodernist theories, you know, suggests technology is an agent. It's not just an instrument, it has an impact and an effect. And there was a real sense of power relations between people who were using the technology and the technology itself. Mm. So on one hand, you had people who felt completely disenfranchised. So these people were people who had the capabilities to use the technology, but there were these social boundaries and these resource constraints and other things going on that were preventing them from being able to use the technology. So they were feeling disenfranchised. And then you had other people who were just disempowered because they just didn't know how to use it.
They knew
it was probably useful for what they wanted to do, but they just did not know how to use it. And also you've got the idea of power with, as I say, for example, in recruitment, you know, this reliance on the technology making the decisions, taking the power away from recruiters who perhaps would rather meet people face to face and on that basis select people. The technology was removing that power from them. And you can't control what the technology says. So, you know, I spoke to students who were coaching themselves to pass these psychometric tests. And the technology is saying they're competent, when actually all they've done is learn what the computer wants to hear. So again, that was interesting. And employers generally did not like their workers using forums. They said they couldn't control what was going on, what was being said. That actually, when people are talking on LinkedIn or talking in these collaborative spaces, these forums, they didn't know what was being said. They would, because they could go and have a look.
Exactly.
But they couldn't control what was being said. And
but they can't anyway. They just the dichotomy there is that they have more access to what's being said.
Yeah.
They're not. Because
what's
being said behind their back, they have no access
absolutely.
To it.
It's like what Eric was talking about today, you know, when students are bad-mouthing professors or their lecturers or whatever. That's always gone on. It's just that we can now go to the place and see what they're actually saying.
Yeah, and it's not. The problem isn't what they're saying. The problem is how we react to it.
Yeah.
And also the problem is what we're doing wrong that takes them and motivates them to a place where they feel they need to express that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I still think, you know, it's complex.
Yeah, no, completely. But yeah, that was very much the feeling of the employers, is that they couldn't exert the control that they'd normally exert over the workers in the workplace in these open spaces, and that actually these people were representing their companies, even though they were on forums outside the organisation, they were representing the organisation.
And that
so
doesn't
got,
change.
Nope.
This is the thing, it's about the reach, isn't it, and the range.
Yeah.
The issues that we face with social media haven't changed.
No.
Nor are they going to change. It's just really reach and
it
range.
Is. Yeah, yeah, definitely it is.
It's confusing. Right. It confuses me. It's like, what are they talking about? It's crazy.
And one of the big things that a lot of the philosophers of technology talk about is the emotive and the sensory response that you have when you use technology.
Yeah, I'm interested to find out about. That's why I'm interested in your literature list here.
Yeah.
Do you have that on your...
Yeah, Donna Hyde. I think I've written... So I might put them in. Donna Hyde writes a lot about that. If he's not on there, I'll give you some stuff about that. And Peter Paul van der Beek.
Could you?
Various people.
Could you tweet
it
to me? Would it be able to be tweeted?
Possibly. I haven't used Twitter for a while. I'm not quite sure what my password is. But if my iPad connects to the internet, it might let me in automatically. So I can do that.
That would be really useful.
But yeah, that's no problem. Yeah, they write a lot about the sensory sense. And you know, sometimes, like with your phone, some people get very attached to the phone and they treat it like almost like a baby, really. Mm. None of the people that I talked to felt that way about the applications they were using, probably because they were applications rather than actual technologies that they were walking around with. But one person in particular is stuck in my mind who talked about loving the use of a business simulation game that actually developed a technical expertise, because what it did was it galvanised and consolidated the knowledge that she had, so she was able to perform those tasks manually. So she was struggling to do this assessment task manually. Mm. What she did was she used this business simulation game to generate the accounts and
right.
then worked backwards.
Yeah.
And she just loved using it because she just felt that she was learning so much from doing that. So I don't think it was the experience of using the game so much as what it actually gave her in terms of her learning and developing her competency. And then another factor is this, and it surprised me, probably shouldn't, I suppose, this very strong sense that if people who want to be accountants are using technology to develop themselves, that actually it's de-skilling them. A lot of the assessors talked about, in my day, I did things manually, and so I'm really technically competent because I know how to do it myself. If a computer tells you how to do it, you lose that skill, and that was the strong sense that a lot of them had. So they would prefer people to do things manually than to use the technology, even though obviously it's a lot more proficient and efficient. And so there was a feeling that it was de-skilling technical knowledge of people. And also, you know, that a lot of these people couldn't write because they were so used to being on their technologies and their computers and what have you, that they'd lost the art of writing, which actually is quite an important skill as an accountant, because you need to be able to communicate quite complex ideas in different ways. So that was a lot of the stuff really that fell out related to technology. And these social media applications that they were using. So what does it mean in terms of future practice? A lot of people...
Sorry, someone.
Okay, thank you. I'm a bit last slide. She said it's the end of time, I think. But this is the last slide, anyway. So, yeah, basically, it's like you said before about the profession of accounting changing completely. When I spoke to people on the International Accounting Education Standards Board, they were like, you know, these people are going to perhaps have 10, 15 careers in their lifetime, even if they do stay in accounting. And so the way that they're socialised is going to be different. The experiences that they have in kind of developing as professionals is going to be different. There's a recognition that technology is going to enable those experiences to be captured in a completely different way.
Yeah.
A lot of people talked about badging, about how people might collect, one person said about collecting pockets of experience like brownie badges. And as a result, people becoming more self-aware of their development needs, more reflective, more demanding of the profession, really, knowing themselves what they want to get out of the profession rather than the profession driving what it is that the professionals need to do. And that the role of the accountant, we're already seeing this, is changing from one that typically, as I say, a lot of people think, you know, accountants are bean counters and they sit down and they do lots of technical work, but actually moving forward, because of the capabilities of technology, it's going to be about analysing and synthesising information and actually the ability to be analytical and critical is going to be much more important than whether actually you can put balance sheet or profit and loss together. So technology will absolutely change the face of accounting moving forward.
Well, is it changing the face of the world?
Completely.
You know, I don't know why we get so surprised. That
yeah.
And also this thing about de-skilling people, it's actually upskilling people
yeah.
because you won't need to write. You won't need to do the things that you used to do because you need to do something that reflects
something
the landscape that you're living
absolutely.
In.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's strange, isn't it, that
yeah.
the perception that people have of
completely.
It. And it's based on some of the stuff you're talking about around fear and anxiety and not knowing and insecurities and all the rest of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd be really interested to see some of your references.
Oh, right,
find you this book, Future of the Professions, How Technology Will Transform the Work of Human Experts.
Thank you.